Let's come back to our breath and be present finally after the busyness of setting up and listen to three sounds of the bell. Welcome, everyone. I feel very grateful today that the basement isn't flooded, which has happened many times in the past when we've had inclement weather. We also talked about, I must have flicked the table. We also talked about the body scan. Actually, I'm curious if I said, have you ever experienced the thunk? You know what I'm talking about? The thunk?
The T-H?
Huh?
The T-H?
T-H-U-N-K, thunk. Thunk. So sometimes we'll be sitting and our mind is kind of a little bit, and then all of a sudden, thunk, it falls into place. And I experienced it. I've heard of people, well, actually I'd experienced it before I heard that it was actually a phenomenon that other people experience. How I experience it is, you ever see a roulette and the ball spinning around and around and around and around and then thunk into one of the numbers. And sort of like that, you know, the mind is just spinning a little bit and then we're trying to concentrate on the breath and then finally thunk and just right into the breath. We talked about the body scan briefly, going from the tip of the head to the soles of the feet. Hey, when he does a body scan, he likes us to smile and calm every bit of the body. We can actually do that very slowly or a little bit more quickly. There's some other ways to look at the body as well, to contemplate the body. We've, in the sutra, the Buddha makes it really clear, or at least as it's recorded in the sutra, that the Anapanasati and the Sutta on the Four Establishments of Mindfulness are connected. They inter-are. And after articulating the 16 exercises, the Buddha says, and carrying them to completion, you can also carry to completion the four establishments of mindfulness. And so if we look at the four establishments of mindfulness, the part of the body, some other exercises that we can use with the body if we find it useful, is the Buddha articulated in the sutra 32 parts of the body. Hair of the head, hair of the body, nails, teeth, skin, flesh, sinews, bones, bone marrow, kidneys, goes on to liver, stomach, chest, heart, feces, urine, sweat, tears, grease. It can be useful to memorize those if we think that that's useful, but I think what I want to say, or you could also have a list of them and do a self-guided meditation. When the Buddha taught this, at least as it's recorded in the sutras, he was teaching looking at the various parts of the body to become disenchanted with them, to become a little bit disgusted with them in the sense of no longer having an appetite for this body. But Tai encourages us to be grateful and to smile at each of the parts of the body, to be grateful for our liver that's been detoxifying poisons before the day we were born, our heart that's been beating. We don't have time to go into the full exploration of the 32 parts of the body. I'm going to send out a recording of when we were doing a online study of the sutra, actually the sutra on the four establishments of mindfulness. We spent one session that was mostly looking at the 32 parts of the body in depth. So I'll send that out to everyone. And if you'd like, you can listen to it or not. You might find it useful. Some of the people in that sutta practice session did. Tai mentioned, this really struck me. He said, I think full liberation is possible just by mindfulness of the body. I said, wow, you think so? And then 17 or 18 years later, I was at a retreat with Tai up at Blue Cliff, and this 12-year-old boy got up during the question and answer period, and he said, "Dear Tai, how do you keep such a peaceful mind?" And I sat there, wow, what a great question. Wow, this kid is amazing. What a great question. What is Tai going to say? How is he going to answer? I was really following my breath and in total anticipation. What is Tai going to say? And Tai breathed in and out for what seemed like a pretty long time, and he said, by keeping a calm body. I said, oh, of course. Tai is constantly monitoring his body for tension, to soothe any tension in his body, and so that he stops that feedback system between body and mind and tension. Beautiful, beautiful. Mm-hmm. Why don't we listen to a sound of the bell? So before we go on, let me ask if there are any more questions about the breath and the body, just that first four exercises, that first tetrad.
I was thinking a little bit about this, and I've been trying to be mindful when I'm walking around outside, but I noticed that I get very easily distracted, of course. And I notice that I feel it's very difficult for me to focus on what's happening in my body when I'm walking and what's around me, like in my neighborhood, because I kind of get bored with it. I know it, you know, I try to focus on lots of different flowers and everything. But then my mind immediately starts getting away from the focus. I was thinking about Tai, that he's so focused every moment, and I said to myself, how does he not get bored? How did his mind get so concentrated on all those little things that are happening around him, the leaves or whatever? So I was wondering whether you comment on that. How to make it more interesting.
I think that the breath and the footsteps generate the source of mindfulness. That's from verse 4 here of the 14 verses. I think that if we really keep with the breath and the steps, the sensation of the steps, and if there's something we want to look at, stop and follow the breath and take breathing in and breathing out and look at it. Try and imitate Tai. I have been doing that. I have not a very large backyard, but it's kind of pretty, and I'm just walking back and forth, and I just am not getting bored with it, following my breath and the steps, the breath and the steps, and then stopping and looking at that tall dead tree, or looking at that mountain laurel, or looking at whatever, but staying with the breath and the I think the breath and the steps, keeping the breath in mind is a real strong way of not getting lost. And that's what Tai suggests. Coming back to the breath no matter what we're doing. So try it. Let me know. And actually, we're going to talk, that touches on something that we're going to talk about in a little while, too. I have gotten, so we're going to, I'm sorry, anything else? Anyone else?
I have a couple of questions. The first is just related to what you were just talking about Tai's suggesting mindfulness of the body and him interrupting the tension cycle and looking for places of tension in the body and then addressing them. So I'm just wondering, as I'm tuning into my body, if I feel tension in a certain spot, what are I'm wondering what some strategies are to release the tension in that spot. I know last week you mentioned a little bit about breathing into that spot. So yeah, just like if you could talk a little bit more about that. And then the second question is, in terms of daily practice, sometimes I struggle with, especially if I haven't been practicing and I'm bringing it back into my life, then I can sometimes struggle with feeling like a heaviness and a weight and a seriousness to trying to remember to bring the practice into my daily life. So for example, you know, I'll just be walking around and I'll notice that my mind is really agitated. And so I'll say to myself, okay, you know, focus on the breath. And then I'll, you know, focus on the breath a little bit and then it'll go away. But there's an energy, it kind of makes everything very serious for me sometimes. When what I feel like we're seeking, and you know what Thai represents also, is this like lightness. And so I'm just wondering, yeah, what some strategies to not have it so serious. Thank you.
So the first question was about releasing tension in the body. If we're in sitting meditation, of course, we probably just want to breathe into it and, you know, notice it and calm it, or just with our mindfulness. Mindfulness is an energy that can hold that tension, and just by noticing it and holding it, Thay promises it will change. Sometimes it feels like it won't, but it will. If we happen to not be doing walking meditation or during our daily lives, if we happen to stretch a little bit to relieve tension, why not? But I think the primary thing is to hold it with mindfulness and just breathe into it. And it is said that just by noticing tension and breathing into it, that it increases the blood flow to that place. I haven't measured it, so I can't swear that that's true. Maybe it is. I guess I'd like to believe it is. You can believe what you like. Seriousness, huh? To being too serious. Well, you're right. That especially when we're walking, we don't go, especially slow walking around in the meditation hall, you know, a little bit of just breathing into it and a little bit of lightness. Maybe one thing you can do to get lighter is to remember 50 ways to watch your breath. That's pretty light. I mean, the other thing I would say would be, you've identified a cause to this, which is having gotten away from the practice. So don't go away from the practice, is another possibility. Reminds me, perhaps we need to think for 1 second or so about painful sensations arising in the body as we're in sitting meditation. What do we do with that? Thay has made it really clear that meditation is an enjoyment, so that if we need to move to adjust quietly, adjust our posture, in sitting meditation, we're welcome to do that. But on the other hand, sometimes it can be useful to just give that sensation a little bit of attention. What happens if I just sit with it for a minute or two? Does it go away? Maybe it gets worse. If you choose to start doing that, I would say the moment you get agitated, the moment you start to get agitated, the moment you start to feel like you're victimizing yourself by sitting still, the moment that there's a little bit of irritation, adjust your posture, gently breathing into it. I have some arthritis in my knees, and I find that after about 35 minutes, 40 minutes, I need to adjust my posture, my legs, and I do. And then just go back to the meditation. So, you know, it's a little, it doesn't have to be super disturbing of our concentration to adjust our posture. We can do that and pretty much maintain our concentration. So, Jan was one to say
something. Thank you. Yeah, living in the world that has a lot of pain and suffering, that's very, really gets inside a lot. Having absorbed a lot of that, those kinds of tensions and escaping from it, because it seems so endless, so horrendous in that way. So to sort of have that be, allow that, or let that be, or be with it as I am, not to go into another thing of sort of like escaping from myself, so to say, because this, all this stuff inside seems so unstoppable and endless, right? So, I'm sort of thinking out loud about the, sort of what you were touching into a bit is like being in and with and sort of accepting the experiencing of pain and suffering as part of living, and that the living sort of is deeper and a real issue of gratitude and wonder about being here at all. So don't have a clear question, except to somehow calm. Calmness, but calmness without spacing out, without just sort of like putting it, like in the garbage or something.
I wanted to ask if you sometimes, if you find you've gotten heavy, you smile at yourself as part of your meditation, or use a little smile to change the tone of the meditation.
Yeah, well, that's one of the primary things for when our mind wanders, to smile and just bring it back. We all forget too much to smile when we begin meditation, to lift up those corners of the mouth and keep them up there if you think about it, because this is pleasant. But yeah, good point. Good point, Jay. Thank you.
Can I say one thing too? Can I add add something to it?
Can you add something? Sure.
You sound good. For a long time had a sense of a little bit of almost aggression towards myself, like I have to meditate. It's only recently I have a sense of like of warmth, of gentleness. I think smiling helps, but actually having that was new for me. So, yeah.
So let's move on to the second tetrad. We see experiencing joy. And here, Tai has translated the word, the Pali word piti, as bliss. Usually it gets translated as joy. I'm going to suggest to you, if we look at this piece of paper carefully, we'll see that Tai maybe, or at least I'm inferring, that Tai was going, I'm not sure how to translate this. So you see how the handwriting is completely different as he writes bliss. But anyway, he wrote bliss. I think happiness, I'm sorry, joy is piti, and he translated sukha. Sukha is the opposite of dukkha, of suffering. Sukha as bliss. And I guess I feel that bliss is a little more energetic. We'll get into that in a minute. And then it's experiencing mental formations and calming mental formations. And we see that the first tetrad was about form, and this tetrad is about feelings. And as we know, or maybe we don't know, that the Pali word that was feelings was vedana, and it means the pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral sensation associated with things. In the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, it's just that, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, experiencing those things. So a lot of people will say, but joy and happiness, that's how I usually, and it's usually translated, that sixth line is happiness. These are perceptions, they're mental formations, they're not feelings. So a couple of people have already asked, what's up with that? And unfortunately, someone who's not here pointed out that there's a version of this sutra that was from one of the northern Indian transmissions, one of the northern Indian sanghas, traditions that that made 5, 6, 7, and 8 about pleasant, unpleasant, pleasant and unpleasant feelings. So I'm going to suggest, and Tai suggests, that experiencing joy and experiencing happiness, we're also experiencing the pleasant sensations that go along with them as we're meditating. And then we'll get to the other two in this tetrad in a moment. How do we experience joy? Sometimes we've calmed ourselves with breath and body to an extent that joy spontaneously arises, that we feel a sensation of tingle almost in every cell of the body. And it can start in one place and then get larger throughout the whole body. Or, if that isn't happening, we might bring to mind a wholesome, joyful thought. Breathe in and out with that wholesome, joyful thought until joy does arise. The image that the Buddha used was like a bathman or a bathman's apprentice, which right there says something to me about the time that the Buddha lived. The cities were just coming together. They had bathhouses, must have in India. So there was somebody whose job it was to be at the bathhouse. So imagine the bathman or his apprentice, the apprentice bathman, who takes a brass bowl and has soap powder in it. That soap powder must have been very granular, probably made of ash and a little bit of lye and some vegetable fat. And takes a whisk, and pours a little water on it, and whisks it up, and pours a little bit of more water and whisks it up until there's a nice ball, moist ball of the soap, so that none of the soap is dry and granular. Every part of this ball of soap is soaked with water. Experiencing joy is like that. Every part of the body suffused with joy. Of course, if we want joy to arise, we have to be cultivating joy, and not just in our sitting meditation. What's really useful is to go out there all day and be a joy detective. Be a joy detective and really notice when something joyful is happening. Really notice that. Some of us have an email list that we're supposed to email every day. Some of us do it every day, and some of us are a little bit more lax. But we like to write three joyful things that happened every day. If we like, we can write one challenge. But that's really been a useful thing to make sure we're noticing joy things. And a couple of the people who are much more regular than I am are sitting here smiling because it's really useful. So the other thing, in addition to having something to go to, a go-to image to bring joy up, be nourishing joy during our day. It makes it much easier for joy to arise. So I'd enjoy a sound of the bell right now. I've been playing around with, I may have mentioned last week, I've been memorizing some of the more unusual gathas from Thai. And one of them is listening to the sound of the bell, I feel the afflictions in me begin to dissolve. My body is peaceful, my mind is calm. Following the sound of the bell, my breath brings me back to the island of self. In the garden of my heart, a flower blooms. So let's listen to a sound of the bell. I'm being careful not to imitate Taiyin drink tea with two hands, because that'd be kind of goofy. You want to see if Michelle's okay?
Oh, where did she go? Okay, sure.
Maybe we can just follow our breath for a moment. Sure. Jenny suggests a song while we're waiting.
Any requests? Song to song?
Happiness is here and now.
Happiness is here and now. I have dropped my worries. Nowhere to go.
Section is experiencing what Tai calls bliss, what most of us call happiness. And how do we do that? Once we're really cooking with joy and feeling that joy is like Christmas morning before the presents get opened. The Buddha said, joy is like a man traveling through the desert who's dry and thirsty and hot and exhausted, and he sees a lake in the distance and he gets very joyful. Then happiness is when the man finally gets to the lake and he jumps in and cools off and drinks to his heart content. He becomes happy. So when we're experiencing joy, we can just let go of that excitement. Let go of that excitement. Come back to a happy feeling. Maybe we have an image that we associate not with that excited joy, but with happiness. We can bring that image to mind. But what I mostly do is just let go of the excitement of joy and allow happiness to pervade the whole body. The image the Buddha used is interesting. I think that sometimes I have to remember that it was very hot where the Buddha lived. It was probably the day of his enlightenment. During the day, it was probably in the low 100s. And maybe on the evening night of his enlightenment, probably didn't get below the high 90s. So the image is this. Imagine a lake fed by a spring with no other inflow from any direction. Rain comes down now and again, but the water coming up from the spring in the center of the lake, nice and cold, and that cool water pervades the entire lake so that no part of the lake is left hot. It's all cool from that cool spring water. As we go into winter, sometimes I don't find that message, that image, so useful. So I imagine a warm body of water as I'm imagining happiness. But you can do what you like. So that's happiness. I think maybe we'll stretch for a moment and then have maybe 10 or 15 minutes of sitting, and maybe I will offer guidance now and again for the first six of the exercises here. Let's do that. Let's stretch a moment. Okay, we can work our way down to, back to our seats. Maybe we'll do 20 minutes. We'll begin with three sounds of the bell. And after 20 minutes, two sounds of the bell. And I'll use the small bell to, I think that on our own, we can, on our own guidance, we can come back to the breath, come back to the body. And then after a while, I'll invite us to experience joy and happiness. can, while we're sitting, stretch out our legs a little bit, massage anything that's become tense. So, of course, it's called a practice because we're not perfect right from the beginning. Anybody experience a little joy? A little bit? We can nourish it, too. You know, once we get a little bit of joy, we can really breathe into it and nourish it. Joy and happiness. Any questions? Comments?
Yes, I have a comment on joy. Neuroscience has told us recently that when we experience joy out in the world, we spend just a minute or two thinking about it. But when bad things happen, we obsess about that. And the lesson is to spend longer with the joyful, remembering them, thinking about them, feeling them in the moment, but we let them go too quickly. And I find that very true.
Joy to happiness. And I'm wondering, I think of happiness almost as a contentment, almost like the energy, you know, when you use the water, it's just a total, and it really works for me. The excitement is kind of like anticipation and the surprise, a good joke. I feel it's important that there's something you can keep collecting the joys, but I think there are other parts of this which I'm curious about that add to happiness. So that's my question. Would you, is contentment and peace a bigger part, how you would describe happiness to you?
Yeah, is contentment and peace involved in happiness? And the answer is yes. And again, that word in Pali is sukha, which is just the opposite of dukkha, which is suffering, craving, unsatisfactoriness. So the opposite of unsatisfactoriness and suffering is sukha. Yeah, so anyway, yes, contentment is in there for sure.
Where is desire in this? I'm just curious.
What do you mean?
Desire. You know, the yearning.
That's a well-debated question. Of course, most of us are aware that the second noble truth is the making, the coming together of suffering. And the cause of that coming together of suffering is craving. It's tanha. But we kind of have a desire to be free. Abhidharma, section of the Buddhist teachings that was kind of parsing ideas, cutting into finer and finer and finer pieces in the hope that they could reach enlightenment, makes a differentiation between wholesome desire and unwholesome desire. So sure, I mean, why we're here hopefully is out of a wholesome desire. And maybe, you know, the Buddha seems to have said that when we're fully liberated, there isn't any desire. The kind of later revolution of Buddhism, the Mahayana, not so sure that that's true. The, you know, desire to help all living beings remains. But I'm a long way from either one of those places myself. I wanted to mention this, that in terms of feelings, we said there are pleasant feelings, unpleasant feelings, and neutral feelings. Actually, Thay has at times taught that there are four kinds of feelings: pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, and mixed. And mixed feelings might be a combination, or might be pleasant and unpleasant really fast after one another arising. But we'll leave the mixed aside, and it's the it's said that, and I don't know how this statistic was collected. I'm reminded of what we used to say at work, which is that 70% of all statistics are made up on the spot. But the statistic that keeps coming up in some of the research and in some of the Buddhism is that, you know, maybe 70% of our experience moment to moment is neutral, and maybe 20% is unpleasant, and maybe 10% is pleasant. So what we can do with that is, if we start really being mindful and we're aware of the moment-to-moment things, that just walking to the subway can go from neutral to pleasant. Doing the dishes, following our breath as we're doing the dishes, can go from neutral to pleasant. Getting dressed in the morning can go from neutral to pleasant, especially if we have gratitude for having enough clothes. Eating, we're frequently just spaced out, caught in indifference, neutral feelings as we eat, rather than really gratitude or appreciation or enjoyment, a kind of healthy enjoyment as we eat. So day after day, we can really increase those neutral feelings and push them into pleasant feelings. Any other?
I noticed I was a bit dull during this past it was a kind of like I tried to treat the dullness kind of gently and not like get knock it down on myself for being tired and drowsy. And there was a kind of happiness and contentment in that. I felt almost like I skipped over the joy. I was just kind of in this pleasant dullness, trying to gently to come out of. But I'm wondering, like, in this, like, is there like some measure of a sequence here where the idea is kind of come about like with the excitement of joy and then move from that to the happiness, or you know what, like, or is there another path you can take through like dullness, say, and come at the happiness in a different direction?
So Tai teaches that we don't have to go through these 16 things in order, that our heart, our mind, our consciousness can know which is most useful in any given time. I would propose that it's really useful, not that you should have this time, and it's fine to experience happiness, but in general, as a practice, it's really useful to sometimes go through, and we'll get to the whole 16 eventually, the whole 16, so that it's like practicing scales. So then we'll have the ability to engage the things that are really useful for us in any given day. So I guess the answer is yes and no. The Buddha, you know, there are antidotes for drowsiness and agitation. And the antidote in the seven factors of awakening, the Buddha taught that, he's compared it to a fire. And if you want a fire to blaze up, do you throw on wet straw and mud? And no. But do you throw on tinder and dry straw? And I think in the sutra it talks about dried cow dung. And to make the fire blaze up. And the bhikshu said, oh yes, of course, Lord. And so if we're drowsy, we can, you know, maybe then we can try a little bit more energy, joy. And something called investigation of phenomena, which means people interpret it in different ways, but the basic meaning is noticing what's wholesome and what's unwholesome, what's useful and what's not useful. So those three things can help us fire up from drowsiness. And if we're like a fire, agitated fire burning, we can tranquility or serenity of body and mind, concentration, bringing our concentration back to the breath, for example, and equanimity, which we probably don't have enough time to talk about equanimity right now. Just as an aside, I just want to introduce, and we'll go into it a little bit more next time, which we have a few weeks now to practice with these things. Hooray! The seventh and eighth exercise, which are much... So I said last time that Most Buddhist traditions don't even use Anapanasati, I think. And the ones that do, the meaning of the seventh and eighth step is much, very widely interpreted. So I'll say that right at the beginning, and I will tell you how Thay tells us to practice with it, because he's our teacher. And it is, mental formations is Chittisankara in the Pali. Mind formations. So we've experienced the pleasant sensations of joy and happiness. And we can look, and if we have some suffering inside of us, if we have some latent thing that's denting our joy and happiness, we can use this energy, this of joy and happiness that we've generated, to mindfully embrace these unwholesome, these difficult, these painful formations, and calm them. Make sense? Yeah. Easy, right? Simple. Simple, but not easy. So, you might want to, when you're sitting now, fold the sheet in half, or even in a third, and just look at the first eight exercises and have them there as we're sitting at home. Now and again, glancing down, you know, kind of going through them, one through eight. And again, it doesn't have to be in order. But I think that it, at some times it's useful to have that ability to go through the scale of these things. So,
I find that confusing that he talks about mental formations in that tetrad of feelings, and then goes on experiencing mind, letting mind. Mind is part of mental formations. So how come he uses those, that term, mental formations, earlier on in the feeling?
Oh my God.
I just find that confusing logic.
It, yeah, many people find that confusing, and we'll talk about it at length the next time we get together. That's okay, because I am completely ready for that question, because I've gotten that question dozens of times. It comes up, I don't know why, I never heard anyone ask Thay that, but I've certainly heard it a lot. You heard it?
Somebody? Why did no one ask Thay that? Why did no one ask?
I don't, because, well, at least at the question and answer periods, which is many that I've heard, nobody ever asked Thay that. So, but I can share some thoughts on that, because my colleague and friend Mitchell from Washington, D.C. and I have spent hours, literally hours, talking about every little facet of this sutra, because we see it a little differently and see Thay's teachings a little differently. But anyway, we'll get there. Can you hold on?
Yes.
Okay, good. Good. I'm glad. Any other questions, concerns, thoughts?
To me, it seems like the first eight don't necessarily just pertain to meditation, whereas the second eight sort of do. Like the first eight definitely can be part of meditation, but all of those things can help in just your daily living. It isn't a separate thing. Whereas the second eight seem more like more deep, where you would have to sit and really think. But all the others having to do with body, because you experience things in your body
all the time with your, you know, whatever you come across in a day. And mental formations, I mean, to me, that's the tape that keeps coming back and playing. You know, and that's always like, oh, there it is again, you know, like you can't erase it. And then calming it is learning how to step out of listening to the tape. So it just struck me as the first eight are more like practical too. And the second eight are to bring the practice deeper.
Yeah, that's a good observation. And in fact, we see that the first eight kind of mirror one another with, being aware and then calming, being aware and calming, being aware and calming. But yeah, to practice them during daily life is great too. Absolutely. I think it's also useful to strengthen them while we're sitting, but absolutely. Going through the day. Dear Tai, how do you keep such a peaceful mind? By keeping a peaceful body. You know, that, knowing, using our mindfulness in every action of the day to hold it, to embrace it. Absolutely. Thank you, Libby. Let me see if there's anything I really need to mention that I haven't mentioned. Just remember, on your nose, Rose. Let's listen to three sounds of the bell. Nice, relaxed, upright position. Again, maybe remembering to tuck the chin just a little bit so that the neck is long. Experiencing that full in-breath and the full out-breath. Smiling. So take a few moments to stretch out your legs before we stand. And for those of you who aren't part of the Rock Blossom Sangha people, cohort, bunch, aggregate, You're welcome to stay for our tea ceremony in a little while. We're having a tea ceremony this evening because it's the fifth Sunday of the month.